wrong with the technology as usual. What we need to do is, because we are trying to expedite this poll, we're going to have a briefing and what comes before meeting. And then we will have submissions for the public hearings. It's going to be chaired, so Comrade Charles de Beer will chair as well. But there's one aspect I have to deal with. It affects the Finance Committee side, and I'll report to Parliament. I want to read you a statement, because a lot of you have been different ways in raising this with me. And to be fair, the DA was conscious enough to call me in regard to this and say, look, Dennis, these sweeping claims that are being made in the media that Parliament was not doing its job and so on, insofar as consultation is concerned, you know full well are wrong, and they don't say anything about it. And so they said they're going to issue a statement to say it's not true. Somebody had said in the public domain, there were public hearings, somebody had said the village was not doing its job. And others have raised this with me that actually it reflects badly on the role of Parliament and the, whatever our differences are with any stakeholders. So I read to you a statement that literally I only drafted about 5 minutes ago because of a series of meetings that came up today. So, but it's consistent with what the majority party had, as you will recall, discussed in a two study groups, one after the other. So this is a statement I read on behalf of the committee, or as a chair of the Finance Committee. It is my right to do so. Anybody who has a disagree with it is free to say so. It notes that the majority in the committee welcomed the decision by government to seek consensus on the annuitization aspects of retirement reform and the request to Parliament to consider some amendments to the bill we passed in November regarding this. We have to, however, and this is a committee as a whole, respond to sweeping comments made about the parliamentary as against the government process, the processing of this bill. And we refer in particular to the report we tabled to Parliament on the bill on the 25th of November 2015. Among the more relevant aspects of the report include the following. So I literally take the words of the report, which all of you voted on. The report reads, the relevant report reads, Scott, meaning Standing Committee on Finance, requested stakeholders and the public to comment on the latest amendments. Written submissions were received and a public hearing was held on the 10th of November 2015. The majority of stakeholders supported the amendments, that means to have annuitization, right? The chairperson of the committee also facilitated further engagements outside the formal sittings of the committee with stakeholders who did not agree with the amendments and National Treasury. Besides the committee's engagements with stakeholders and the public, National Treasury reported to the committee that they also engaged with stakeholders before and after the bill was introduced to Parliament. In the case of the retirement reform amendments, these consultations, notice this, according to National Treasury, we're very careful, have been taking place since 2012, including through NEDLAC. Even though finally, and this must be said, Treasury did not mislead Parliament, even though finally there was no agreement in NEDLAC on the tax harmonization and annuitization amendments. So, colleagues, can I say, whatever happened between National Treasury and COSATU, the fact is that Treasury came in and said, there wasn't consensus in NEDLAC. And we've checked with Andrew Jenkins, who speaks for himself, there is no law that requires agreement in NEDLAC before or regulation in Parliament can proceed with a bill related to the issues raised in NEDLAC. There's no such thing that Jenkins will explain in a moment. We want to make this clear so that it doesn't recur. So let me go back to our statement. The report last year continues to read. So I'll repeat you. Treasury said that finally there was no agreement in NEDLAC on the tax harmonization and annuitization amendment. The committee is unable to tell about the quality and depth of these negotiations. But that there have been negotiations clear to the committee. So we didn't swallow what Treasury said. He said, yeah, you come and give us a list, I think, of meetings from 2012, if I recall. And we said, yeah, these are items on the list. How do you know what came out? So you can't say anything about the quality, but we do recognize the quantity of meetings is. We go on to say, your report, this is your report, colleagues and comrades. Your report. You adopted it. The committee did everything possible under difficult circumstances to try to get consensus on these amendments, and it deeply regrets, we said, that it was not able to. Chile has provided evidence that those aspects of these amendments that the Congress of South African Trade Unions disagrees with, requiring annuitization, will begin to come into effect after 5 years or more for most workers. You remember they came with their proposals, we asked for it to be looked, I think Dumasani looked at it and so on. And the committee has amended the bill, and this is the important thing, this is what our committee did. The committee has amended the bill to require the minister to review them through consulting further with stakeholders and reporting back to Parliament by the 20th of June 2018. In effect, we gave the minister 2 years to consider consulting. Then I just quote here what the report said about the relevant version of the Act and the proposal the minister must do. That's 9 a.m. there. Given the level of indebtedness we were on to say, the committee is excruciating, not even acute level, excruciating the aware, I can't think of a stronger word, of how strongly, strongly workers feel about access to the Provident Funds. And an urge Treasury to embark on a massive campaign to engage with workers and their representatives on these proposals. You recall the last part of the report deals with, we refuse to vote on the report, right? We refuse to vote on the report until National Treasury came to us and said, what are you actually going to do? You've got a copy of the report, colleagues. And you look at the last section, 6. It's entitled Massive Communication and Engagement Program, where we set out what Treasury is proposing to do. They are intended, from what I subsequently gathered through engagement with them, to do so from the middle of December. But certain events, as you know, happened on the 9th of December. And obviously, it's perfectly understandable they were let's put it this way, slightly askew. And so they didn't get things done in the way they might otherwise have done. So we go on to say, another section of our report says, the committee believes that the comprehensive social security reform paper, which has been on the agenda for more than 10 years, needs to be finalized as soon as possible and urges government to ensure the paper is published as soon as possible. National Treasury has made it clear that the retirement reform amendments referred to in Section 2 above are consistent with the pending paper. So that is basically from the report. One doesn't need the permission of this committee to issue the statement. Only the first paragraph actually is something new. But now the paragraph goes on to say, the committee did in fact the public hearings, did in fact the report from National Treasury on the NEDLAC process, did in fact say that we cannot judge the quality of the NEDLAC discussions, and did in fact over a further 2 weeks foster negotiations with parties opposed to annuitization. And we go on to say that National Treasury did in fact indicate there was no consensus in NEDLAC. Then we go on to say that perhaps the committee could have done more to seek to ensure public participation and foster consensus. But it seems to us not much more. So in other words, I think we have to, as Parliament, defend our integrity, and we have to count, because many of you have raised this with me, and I said, look, I don't want to now, with government having sensitive negotiations with COSATU and whoever else, the presidency being involved, no, and then the team is going to jump on the bandwagon. This is what they did, but to be fair to them, they did issue a statement where they did phone me beforehand, and, you know, what could I say? So I think, in fairness, this is done now. Whatever happened, put our issue on the record. I'm just pleading now. Let's not get caught up in the past. Let's move on. This is a committee that has rejected this, what we call conveyor belt system of public hearings. We have public hearings for the day or the week before we vote on the bill. So I don't think we can be accused of failing in our duty to consult. Maybe failure in our duty to be more sensitive to some of the issues at stake. Maybe failure in our duty to understand some of the complexities from the point of view of those who are aggrieved with the annuitization. But on consultation, I don't think that's a fair comment, and I don't think it's right to say it on this committee, and I'm doing my job as a chair, as I keep saying, a chair has to chair. And frankly, from my colleagues, the government says, you already bought, you adopted it. I'm just repeating except there's only two paragraphs that are from the report. Can we not enter into a long fight now about whether there was consultation, whether there wasn't consultation? I'm putting it on record. What more you want? Please, let's not have a fractious discussion. Let's move on. Now we have to see consensus and move forward. Thank you. Yes, I wrote my comment about you jump on the panel. Don't respond. That was facetious, right? It's irritating you. So if that's the response, I withdraw it already.
Massive workers who are mad about this thing and said to them, all right,
You see, you have to have privatization, but in certain specific circumstances, like Aventura and my friend Yunus would say, so now, can we just move on? I really don't think Prasad will need to reply to that. That's his view. If you want to reply to it, you could, but I don't think David's helping anybody. I thought the statement covers us. What more you want? No, I mean, the thing is, I really don't think we want to do that, really. Andy, you got your hand up, little lady. Can we just, I thought this covers us. I should have sent a statement to you before, but I haven't even finished the last paragraph I'm typing in now. What must I do? Chair, I have a lot of work to do. Okay, Johnny.
Thank you, Chair. Listen, there are two choices. We had a choice of taking responsibility of leadership in country. And one of the most important decisions we've taken is to revisit the process. That's why we are here today. We took that decision irrespective of the differences we had before. Today we will relook into the matter. And we all agree that we will have this meeting today where we'll have another session where there will be public hearings and we'll give all stakeholders, and when I'm saying all, I don't want to single out one, but all stakeholders that wanted to have an opportunity again to re-engage us. Therefore, I suggest Comrade Honourable Chair, I don't know, I'm in a different mode now. I'm black, green, and gold today. I'm there. It's voter registration over the weekend, you know, so I wanted to show David that you can beat them hands. I'm always wasting my time. But nevertheless, can you stick to the agenda? Get presentations, engage on the basis of what we have before. Because if we look back, it will not take us forward. So it's my humble submission that let's move on. We agreed in principle that we'll reopen it, and we're at that stage. Because if you can even respond and say, no, we did not say that, then we'll have to bring all of these respective things and make justifications that are not going to be of help in any way. Our responsibility is to look at what are the challenges that we need to look at and where we deviate to agree in principle and continue. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I'm partially covered by the time. I also want to request that we should not get to that stage. I think we have an agenda here that is guiding us. There are items on the agenda and just follow the items. Because I'm not sure what Honorable David is trying to do, but there's a bathroom for you in the house that you can do all these things. We are here as a committee and you have presented the statement on behalf of the committee and we should just behave like that.
Chairperson, just to Chair, to clarify the process, this will be referred to the Finance Committee and SOP after the debate in the NA. It will be before the SOP plenary on the 15th of March. So we're not rushing it on the other side. Thank you.
Can I also raise this thing? Tandy is right to raise this. I got calls from several members to ask that since Parliament's court sittings today, and because we all want to be, especially those who are in the far-flung areas of their provinces, not near the metropolitan airport, shouldn't we call it up? We couldn't because it's a public hearing, and we have to finish before the court arises. Secondly, tomorrow we have no choice. If we do not have the sitting tomorrow, we can't vote on our report on Tuesday, we can't debate in the House on Wednesday, and the money bills process will be completely thrown askew. So I'm sorry that people have. I have no desire to be here by the way either. Although mine is a simple one, a 100-kilometer drive from Etiquini to Sandusi, right? But how about myself, Mr. Kaledi and us? For you, there's no choice but to meet today. Can we move on? Can you just briefly, for the sake of the committee, and clarify it because it's important? These items were put on the agenda yesterday, but I couldn't get them to change it because it's important. Can you speak briefly so that we understand the whole process? Because a lot of the bills that come to us, which are socioeconomic, have to go through NEDLAC. Like, can you explain the relationship? Because there are a lot of new members here. I had to finalize with you what NEDLAC access. Can you, in a nutshell, explain the relationship between NEDLAC processes and Parliament processing a bill, especially in the context where there isn't consensus?
Thank you, Chair.
I think first thing one must understand is that NEDLAC replaced the formerly Manpower Commission, I think it was called, in 1994. And the purpose of NEDLAC is a consensus-seeking body between labor, business, and government. So, this is not consensus-seeking, so consensus is not critical. What is critical is that the executive has taken it upon itself with NEDLAC, to process any kind of labor legislation through NEDLAC before they bring it to Parliament. And that applies equally to socio-economic policy. So it's not a legislative requirement for legislation to go through NEDLAC as such, when looking from Parliament's perspective. If you look at the whole picture, when it comes to labor legislation, it must go through NEDLAC. But legislation, as we're dealing with today, tax law, that is a policy matter that should go through NEDLAC and there should be consensus seeking. NEDLAC has the power to report on whatever comes before it, whether it's policy or legislation. NEDLAC reports to the Minister of Labour. And it's upon the Minister of Labour who must bring the report to Parliament, who must table that report in Parliament. That includes annual report of NEDLAC as well as reports on legislation and policy. So it is not, well, Parliament doesn't have the power really to go sit in NEDLAC and to make submissions there other than in an official parliamentary capacity. So it is an executive organ, well, it's managed as an executive organ with the three partners, three branches of industry there and labor there, the trade unions. So let me leave it at that. I don't want to take up too much time.
Any questions about that? What I understand, I think don't look at it now, I think you look at it in greater detail. It is a grey area from what I was speaking to various lawyers. That what happens, you see, firstly, our issue of the two meetings later, think about it. Whether you need a written or a verbal report, and if there's no consensus, you still need a report that says, yes, this is what we get, and we didn't achieve consensus report, and then, and so on, because a lot of the other bills come. I think what we do is we set some time aside, maybe you can do it on one page or something, and then we have a discussion on this properly, so it's clear. It's not very clear what happens to a report.
I don't want to prolong it, but part of the one page, I want to understand that in an event that NEDLAC did not agree or did not reach consensus, does it therefore suggest that ministers cannot bring legislation to Parliament?
There's consensus seeking. So if there's no consensus, that legislation have gone through the deliberation process in NEDLAC, it can come to Parliament. There's no problem with that.
And in what happened before Tandy, there are a few bills that I still recall that were not complete consensus, but it was process.
Yeah, it's because that's how I understand it. Because consensus seeking is more of consultation and engagement. That doesn't necessarily translate into agreements. That's how I perceive it. But that doesn't mean we're not open up for discussions and clears out one of the perception that there was no proper consultation or enough consultation in this context. Because we had a position that there was engagement at that level. So I think that space has been cleared just so far. Thank you.
Consensus because of the importance of having government, labor, and business agree. Obviously, we want that. Makes our life easier. Also, of course, even if NEDLAC doesn't arrive at consensus, say there's one aggrieved party, there's nothing stopping Parliament from deciding that we agree with the aggrieved party. But we can't stop a minister from bringing the bill. So, Tani, you are right. Okay, thank you all. So, we'll have one page to appear to us. Can you then hand over quickly to National Treasury, take us through the bill, and then we'll start with the submissions from the stakeholders. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. And we'll start with the first slide. So, Chair, we've got obviously four of us from the Treasury. Chris, who you know, Andy at the back. Books with Yanga and Puta was overseas, and Arena Terra behind me. Chair, I think, just to start off and perhaps in line with what you've been saying, Treasury certainly seeks a way forward to proceed with obviously the existing retirement reforms that you have, and really we don't think that we should try and dwell on the past in a different our focus is on what is best for members of retirement funds, which is in line with treating customers fairly, objectives that you've seen under Twin Peaks and so on. I think too, Chair, that retirement savings of members must be safe and protected at all times, and of course seem to be safe and protected. And in that sense, I think we felt that, you know, this is a matter close to hearts of people who have saved, and issues of confidence and trust are quite critical. It's not very unlike the banking sector. Certainly people want to know that the retirement funds are safe for 50 to 100 years, because even after they die, they want to be certain that the commitments that are made in a fund materialize. So you can't go insolvent, for example, over that 70, 80, 90 year period. And I think for us, certainly as a Treasury, I think we would really want to strive for a united message with all the key stakeholders. And I say this because the moment there isn't a united message, there's a lot of suspicion. And if there are public attacks on each other's integrity, that at the end of the day generates great confusion on the ground and does lead to perverse outcomes like resignation. So I think certainly as Treasury, we're all hoping that certainly there will be differences and criticism, and that's fine, but let's be constructive in our criticism and focus on solutions. I think that where we have a situation, certainly in the retirement space, you know, I think I've said this before in Parliament, you know, anyone's scheme, you just need one person to scream fire, and that causes panic in a cinema or in a bioscope, as we used to say in old days, okay? And it's a press freedom of speech sort of argument about why you, you know, it's not freedom of speech to scream fire. And obviously that will generate panic even if there's no fire. So I think we just need to all bear in mind, I think, our responsibilities in this respect. So certainly the trend is open to further engagements, because certainly when it comes to an issue like retirement, we'll always have some differences. And whatever rule you have will always, you know, not be in line with specific person's personal objectives. But certainly it's something that I think there is a role for the state and for the stakeholders. And such engagements, certainly in the Treasury, we must be clear and must lead to outcomes in a timely way. And certainly these processes should not be used as a delaying tactic. And I think there's, you know, certainly I think where we sit, we believe that there's much to reform in this time industry. And I look at some of the inputs even today, and, you know, we've long felt, and if you look at the processes that we've had as a Treasury, this has been a very considered process. We believe that there's many bad practices that exist, issue of charges, poor governance, poor communication, conflicts of interest. Often the fault are not necessarily with one party or the other. Often it's, you know, you can, something doesn't happen because it's across the board. All of us aren't doing what we're supposed to be doing. But okay, just to move on, and I'm not going to dwell on this slide because I think you've dealt with it, but the very brief history, I think, and background is that the law on annuitization and tax harmonization was passed in 2013. And of course, as you know, the 2014 law postponed it by 1 year. So and the 2015 law, tax laws, contrary to what's been out there in the public domain, it only defines like some coverage or gap issues that there were, and really only touches this annuitization issue with regard to increasing the so-called de minimis, which had the 2015 Act not dealt with it, would have remained, would then have been 150,000. Instead, it was increased from the current, or what was the current last number, 75,000, instead of increasing to 150,000, this became 247,500. So, in actual fact, even if, for example, the law was the 2015 TLAC was not signed into law, the annuitization provisions would still have been law because it's in the 2013 Act and not in the 2015 Act. So So often in the calls to step the 2015 law, certainly we've been through various processes at NEDLAC, Section 77 processes, where initially a lot of the demands were on the stepping of the 2015 Act, which really would not, we think, certainly have not dealt with the problem that people, or the concerns that some various parties have. So certainly I think, yeah, and I'm not going to, I think the report you were referring to of the validity date of 21st November 2015, I think spelled out a lot of the issues, because much has been said, was there consultation, was there agreement, who lied, this, that, and we want to move away from those issues, but I think this report really does cover what was done, the meetings that took place, and certainly it's really coming to this committee and saying we failed to reach agreement. And we said this around the end of October, when, because the draft TLAB last year didn't actually deal with these issues, but then when the bill was tabled, we tried to look at an approach and we presented two options, which considered one of the options did have an option to delay on annuitization. But this was discussed pretty thoroughly by the committee, and certainly, as I said, the report that the committee issued, I think, it is a good summary, and I would recommend it as reading for anyone who wants to sort of know the facts, I think would get a sense of it. So, Chair, of course, what then happened and why we're here was after this was signed into law, first it was signed to express its strong opposition, other unions also followed, and started to launch a Section 77 notice at NEDLAC of the intention to strike, I'm putting it more broadly, unless the issues were dealt with, okay? Initially, they were also going for the strapping of the Act, but these demands became more refined to the neutralization issues. The other unions then followed, NUMSA followed, then it was a union called NUPSO, and thereafter EMCU. So he's sitting with four Section 77 notices in that day. Certainly there are those who have continued to favor the legislation, be it FIDUSA and Act through ASISA, USA, and their statements. Just the fact that there was a strong public opposition or the differences that you saw out there certainly ignited fears. We've heard stories of people resigning, cashing out, which gets back to my initial point. When it comes to retirement, it's best to argue and fight like hell in a room. And when we communicate to the people out there, at least it's done in a way that doesn't scare people. Because even if you don't intend to scare people, just strong differences tends to scare people. So certainly government was concerned about the fact that clearly there wasn't enough consensus to deal with all of this open public and strong statements been issued. Government could be in meetings with NEDLAC constituencies, particularly the Labour constituency. There's been several bilaterals that have taken place. And Cabinet on the 17th of February announced a two-year postponement of these provident fund sections. And then Treasury then provided, as you know, these press conferences are day after Cabinet. Treasury issued a statement titled Tax Benefits Continue Annuitization Postponed. And we have got copies that have been circulated, which then announce the approach that we would take and which really guides the retirement, the Revenue Laws Amendment Bill that we have before us today. So government certainly went further. I think certainly the issue of the long delay, very, 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 very long delay and continued non-publication of the Social Security Reform Paper, government has committed to do that, to publish, to try and get published this year. In fact, the Ministry of Budget talked about doing it by in the first half of this year. So in a sense, that's why we're here. See, I'm not going to go through the slide because I think the parties are here, but certainly before the Revenue Laws Amendment Bill this time we haven't taken draft comments, so we haven't seen anybody's comments on the bill until they started flowing through this week. But these were the sort of concerns that were raised about the Social Security reform paper not being out, about the issue of some parties regarding confederation as a form of preservation. But I won't go into this, you know. Let the parties speak for themselves and let their own members speak for them. I just want to say, I want to use the opportunity, though, just to deal with a few misconceptions. I think we've dealt with the first one, so I'm not going to deal with it, because many people out there thought that there were no hearings last year. In fact, I have to remind people, you know, the president actually signs every law of the country into effect, and I'm sure he does it quietly in a room. And, you know, when laws are signed, they don't just come from, like, nowhere. They obviously come from Parliament, so there's been some process. So it's been interesting that one had to talk to people about just the normal parliamentary processes that take place. Certainly in the NEDLAC, it is also a misconception that no meetings took place. Lots of meetings took place. And okay, I can move on. Okay. Let me make the last point. Just
order.
Okay. I think there's also been a lot of confusion coming from the media, because even some of our noted newspapers have got the law wrong and said the wrong, and we've had to factually correct them. So, you know, I'm saying this has been quite broad, and we've had to obviously deal with it. And I'm raising the issue of these misconceptions because I think they're important to sort out. So to move on, of course, and say what are the facts, of course, a lot of people thought the government's even taking over their retirement fund. Of course, that's not true, so let's just say that. The GEPF was not affected, so no point that people were resigning to cash out their savings. The new law, of course, does not amend the pre-retirement preservation story in a sense that anyone who resigns can still cash in their retirement savings, whether it's a pension fund or a provident fund. Of course, we strongly discourage that. We don't think it's a good idea, but if people want to do it, they can do it. They lose their jobs. They may not even get re-employed. So those are issues. We do feel that the issue of preservation does need to be dealt with as what we consult over the next 2 years, because it is quite a difficult issue. I think it's also been interesting when we've been through the Section 77 processes that there are often pretty many contradictory views that come through, which makes it quite difficult to draft a way forward. So, for example, there are some that may argue strongly that there's no role for the state in dealing with retirement funds. Even when, for example, it's pointed out that, you know, sure, anybody has a right to spend their money as they like, but if you've enjoyed the tax deduction, which is to get you to save, surely there's some role for the state. If you don't want it, in a sense, you don't have to take the tax deduction. The tax deduction is there for a reason. Similarly, we've had cases where people have argued strongly for pretty radical economic policies. We have to draw on the Conservative Party in the UK and saying, but they phased out the mutualization, why are we going back with it? There's also been strong opposition to preservation, yet, you know, people, we all agree that there's a lot of people, when it reaches the point of retirement, they are particularly vulnerable to opportunistic financial advisors, and by that I don't mean formal financial advisors. Everyone in the family becomes a financial advisor, your friends become financial advisors, and how people deal with these some amounts, I think, does become a challenge to be dealt with. So, Chair, let me then move on to actually deal with some of the issues that have been raised, and I'll get on to the bill as well. I think that the demand then, therefore, that the 2015 Tax Act be scrapped, Clearly, and I'm only responding because that is a specific demand. I mean, we in this room, most of us know that every year we have to go through the torture of the tax laws amendment bill process. year in, year out. Okay? And of course, I've already made the point that if we were to actually scrap any tax law, it actually is an effective reflection of the proposals in the budget, the tax proposals. Of course, there is a separate rate bill, and of course, this could lead to funding problems and allow tax abusers and abusers that we're closing to continue because we have reversed that. I'm not even sure that you could, in a sense, reversing this issue. I'm scrambling an egg or scrambling it back. I don't know, but it would be as impossible as that in some instances, not all. So of course, and I've just dealt with what the 2014 Act deals with. So certainly, what we've tried to do in this book is to say, look, the concern has been adjudication. So the proposal that the Minister of Finance then put forward in the 18th of February statement is then to postpone the requirement for Provident Fund members to purchase an annuity for the next 2 years. Okay. In the meanwhile, the Minister also announced that the tax deduction will also be given to members of Provident Funds in the same way it is given to everybody else. And of course, the Revenue Law Amendment Bill makes that the major sort of proposal. The point the Minister has made is that if after 2 years there's no agreement, and I'll come back to that later, on annuitization, whatever the agreement is, we're not saying it's got to be in the form that it's in. I think the Minister's talked about having a period of consultations to look at the design of the annuitization, but the tax deduction will have to stop if there's no agreement after 2 years, and I'll come back to that and explain why. Because it will really open up the entire retirement system to massive leakage from pension funds to provident funds. And I'm not sure that anybody would want to go in that direction. So the proposed legislation then postpones the requirement to purchase an annuity. It extends vested rights. So the vested rights that we had up to 1st March 2016, that any, for example, any provident fund members over the age of 55, will not be required to annuitize. All of that is postponed for another 2 years, which means that if you're 53, you'll score, assuming we didn't implement in 2 years' time because you only reach 55 then. It also helps to ensure that we don't have to deal with the problem of transfers because that's what the Act requires done from pension funds to provident funds or retirement annuity funds. Remember, we wanted more portability, you could shift between, but to do so in a tax-free way. So there are tax provisions that have been in the system, they will continue to apply. So if we look at the legislation, do you want me to talk through the slide, the specific clauses, what they do? So if you look at the clause, the bill itself only has about six clauses, right? And of course, the longest clause is clause one, but let me ask Chris to quickly scroll through those clauses.
So, maybe a clause by clause quickly for the committee. Okay, so the first clause, I know it's very long, but it's restating the paragraphs in the definitions of the different types of retirement funds. It's all restated, but the only thing that's changing there is the date from 1 March 2016 to 1 March 2018, which is, if you look at just the first clause on the first page, closer to the end. And the reason we... Yeah, 947,
page 3,
and 55, and 58, and 40, 41 as well. So, it's just, as Mama mentioned, we were changing the vested rights to the later date, which is why we couldn't have a bill just a one line and said everything's postponed, because then the text would be wrong. So we had to reprint that for pension funds in the second page.
So 1A is pension funds,
yeah.
Then we have the exemption clause 1B, the way I understand it.
So it's quite different because there's different, there are a few different provisions for pension funds, but 1B, which is on page 4, is for pension preservation funds. 1C, which is at the bottom of page 4, is for provident funds.
Wing B, which is on the middle of A5, is for Provident Preservation Fund, and then Wing E on A6 is for Retirement Annuity Fund. So that's why it's so long, but it's not too complicated. On A7, on Clause 2, we made a technical correction to the deductions that would be allowed for the fringe benefit for defined benefit contributions. It was a very important technical correction, and the result was we needed to put it in this bill. The correction is that the deemed value of the contributions for defined benefit members, i.e. if you're part of the GEPF, you're part of the defined benefit fund, what the Taxation Laws Amendment Act does is it deems a value for your fringe benefit for the employer contribution based on the benefits you'll get out of the fund. In the same way you deem values for company cars and other things, there was a slight technical error which limited the value of the deduction that you could get, which inadvertently might mean that individuals would pay more tax if they were part of the GEPF or another type of defined benefit fund. That was never the policy intent. It wasn't what we were trying to do. The deduction was supposed to be the full value of the fringe benefit, and we made that correction there.
So this is the only provision that's got nothing to do with the postponement, but some of the payroll administrators approached us and pension funds to get clarity. So this clarifies things. So this is the one that we've got nothing to do with the postponement, just so that you know, okay? Go ahead.
Okay. Clause 3, it deletes a few sections. So what it deletes is the previous paragraphs you saw, it deletes those ones in the previous bill with all vested rights, the PP, DZ, and ZC. The next part, all the paragraphs, K, L, O, Q, R, U, W, X, and Y, are postponed until 1 March 2018. They deal with a variety of things, from the exclusion of GEPF, from removing the Provident Fund definition, removing Provident Funds to pension funds, Provident Funds within pension funds, which is what the coverage gaps we were trying to achieve. It doesn't allow tax-free transfers into pension preservation funds or into Provident Preservation Funds, and it also doesn't allow some other types of transfers that we don't want. So, for example, if we are postponing annuitization, we don't want pension fund members to be able to transfer into a Provident Fund and suddenly they can get their whole fund in a lump sum tax-free. So, that's what we were trying to avoid. Yeah. So, and then C, by the deletion of Section 8, that deletes the two-year review that the committee asked for in the final version of the bill, given that we're going to have further engagement in 2 years. Clause 4 is a postponement of tax-free income from compulsory annuities. So this is if you were part of a Provident Fund and you had a contribution that you made that was above the limit, it was taxable. If you are now forced to purchase an annuity, the income that you receive on that annuity will be tax-free. Because we are no longer forcing Provident Funds to annuitize, we can delay that provision by 2 years. And lastly, on clause 5, this is the tax-free transfer element. So it's paragraph 6 of the second schedule, which is that you can't transfer tax-free from a pension or pension preservation fund to a Provident or Provident Preservation Fund. You can only do that within 2 years' time.
Okay, the only one line clause is clause 6, which is the name of the bill. But I think for some of us who deal with tax laws, you almost certainly know that in tax you never get one line and so on. And as I've said often, I just say I don't wish my worst enemies to read any text.
Okay, thank you.
Is
there anything else?
So
I realize that, you know, my treatment at the beginning was the most abysmal failure. I took 5 minutes to read it, and everybody is now forgetting I read it and sliding in all sorts of innuendos. Can we just focus on the issues and move forward? That includes treasury. Can we focus now on the issues?
Okay.
No one's talking about a one-line bill. We've said it so many lines, blah, blah. But I think in philosophy, it's a one-line bill.
Yes.
In idea, in your head, it's a one-line bill. Yeah. So, but can we move on, please? Focus on the issues.
Yes.
I mean,
what's important is also what's not in this bill, and what's not in this bill is the day of the tax deduction, as we said. All of the tax amendments go through. Those were the big, difficult administrative issues that would need to change every single employer's payroll in the country to deal with new tax deductions on employer contributions, and you know that's gone through, so that administrative issue shouldn't be there. We have also allowed the de minimis to still be increased, and there was some confusion that maybe we haven't increased the de minimis because it was repeated in the bill. We actually haven't deleted the provisions in the previous bill, so the de minimis does still increase to $247,500.
So, Jay, just to end off, I think it's because it's obviously there are so there are advantages and disadvantages, and I'm just quickly rattle through them.
Okay, some of them I've mentioned. There's none of the big administrative changes at this late date for the payrolls. Members should still get the tax advantage straight up front. The advantages that we've also spoken about at length on the possibility for continued engagement, actually discuss and get to the bottom of what the problem with the neoetatization is, what are the potential solutions we can do to get around those problems and have some in-depth and quality engagements on the issues. Disadvantages are, of course, we've created even more confusion now because we've changed everything again, and the fund rules and also the pension fund administrators, because now they can't neoetatize, have to go back to their old rules. A lot of them had already had to change their rules, so there is an administrative impact there. The big problem or the big risk for us is on the tax deduction side. If we have a tax deduction, but in 2 years we don't have agreement, you know, it puts the whole retirement regime at risk. You can't then allow it to discontinue. Every pension fund member would say, why is my Provident Fund member friend getting a full tax deduction, but I have to annuitize and he doesn't? So we're going to have to deal with that within 2 years' time, and it is a risk. And we don't want to allow those diverse outcomes to arise. So those are the things we've got to deal with. Will it be more harmonized in 2 years? What will it look like? We just hope that engagement can get to some sensible solutions within that time.
So just in ending, what I think want to just to point out is there are potential risks, and that is actually very important if we do get agreement over the next 2 years, because we could get those outcomes. Jay, just so that there's some perspective as well, I think certainly as we've been through this, there were lots of concerns, for example, on annuitization and so on. Just to say that the other urgent reforms that we started that are still in the process, like default rates and so on, which is the first step towards proposing steps to lower charges and improve market conduct. Those we do and hope to proceed with. Certainly, we've heard concerns around annuities, that do they deal effectively with widows and beneficiaries. We think that while there are those products, I mean, for members to choose when they retire is often difficult, so that we want the sort of funds themselves to help members who are retiring to negotiate or provide in-house annuities. All retirement funds must also provide mandatory financial advice when people are retiring, so members who are exiting or retiring know exactly what their life circumstances is and therefore what's the most appropriate, and to the extent that they prefer a lot more money to be transferred to widows and beneficiaries, they choose the right annuity, the so-called green annuity. Government also intends to, and has been looking at offering retail bonding annuities to open up the market. Other reforms, certainly we've heard the concerns for the means test for the old age grant, which have been announced in previous budgets, but we are looking at how we could fast track it for those who save. And certainly there's issues of vulnerable workers, and I think most important, I've talked about the Social Security paper being released. So Chair, we'll stop there.
Questions, please? Alf? Any other questions? Divisa?
Go ahead, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Right. The question of vested interest and transfers between Provident funds to rationalize the whole industry. Those vested interests are not going to be lost if those transfers happen. Or are they? Because even if we put this bill aside in terms of the bill we enacted, I think there was some concern about that. The loss of vested interest where provident funds amalgamate or combined or disappear and a new one is formed. The question of the tax deductions for the provident fund contributions for the next 2 years, I mean, you correctly say that it's an issue after 2 years, but after 2 years it's an issue right now, not after 2 years. It's completely inequitable that people get a tax deduction over the next 2 years for their provident fund deductions, and then they can take their money up before that 2 year period is up, and there's no tax implication for them. It's just not right. And why is it that the minister and you guys are not proposing that benefit to stop as well for 2 years? I'm just not clear about the mechanism you're putting in place to stop pension fund transfers into provident fund in order to get the benefit now of tax deduction and tax-free lump sum withdrawal. You did talk about it, but I'm not 100% clear how you're achieving it.
It's more clarity on the issue of age. I want more to clarify me whether did I understood him correctly when he said if you are above 55 years, based on the new recommendations, you will not have to annuitize. Is that the case? Or what are we trying to say there? I'm not clear on that.
Anyone else? Oh no? Any plan?
Thanks, Honourable Members. So the vested rights or the ability to take an amount of the lump sum, that will only need to be implemented from 1 March 2018 when provident fund members are required to annuitize. Now, if they make any transfer before that, it relates to your third question. If they transfer between provident funds and provident preservation funds, they're fine. Before that, they can still take everything as a lump sum. If after that they then transfer to, say, a pension fund or a pension preservation fund, the new vested rights will mean that any amount you had in your account on the 1 March 2018 and any growth on it, you can still take as a lump sum when you eventually retire. So we shouldn't lose any vested rights. It should actually be slightly more beneficial because you've now got an extra 2 years, and if you're at the moment just 54, you're now not a junior guy anymore. On the second one, on the tax deduction, I don't know if I'm asking anything, but from an administrative perspective, you know, that would have been a huge issue for every employer in the country. To take that away, you know, less than a month or a month before it was going to be implemented. I don't know if you want to say
that. And I think, yeah, that is a big factor, that there just wasn't time. But the other side, too, is that, you see, if you look at our current system, and that's where some of the abuse in structuring has been, is that the employer component is a non-taxable fringe benefit. So, in a sense, you're getting a tax deduction on that portion. What provident fund members were not, so at the higher income, people will structure so that they make no contribution and the employer makes a full contribution. But for most workers, it works the other way. They often make a contribution over and above what the employer does, and they will not enjoy a tax deduction on their contribution. So at the moment, there is a partial one, and frankly, if we did give the tax deduction and we removed it now on the employer contribution, I think it would create a lot of hardship, and I think would be socially totally destabilizing. If you're going to prepare that people are going to stop getting the tax deduction that they've already been getting, it will require time, and of course we will have a similar issue in 2 years, if there were no agreement, that for people to get used to a lower take-home pay because the tax kicks in, it is something that's both on the uncertainty will be an issue in 2018, assuming there's absolutely no team.
Thanks. And the other question on how do you see the stopping of losses? Tadini said you can correct me if needed. But at the moment, if you're in a provident fund and you'd like to transfer into a pension fund, you withdraw out of the provident fund and you pay tax on that withdrawal. And then you can put the money into a pension fund.
Okay.
And what the new law would have done was we made it much easier for everybody to just transfer amongst all the different funds so that hopefully there would be consolidation of funds. And you've taken the ability to transfer tax free away. So if you still wanted to do that from now, you would have to pay the tax and it would be as much of a good area as it was before. From a pension to a province as well. I don't think you're not actually allowed to at all transfer from a pension to a province because otherwise you could get it as a lump sum, if that's correct.
I don't know if anyone's come in because, Chair, that's what I'm saying. One does need to look at the legal situation and we too often have to double and triple check with the legal. Is that right?
Let's get full clarity. Yes, and we're all on the same page.
Well, we can look at it and quickly come back in 5 minutes or something. The age 55 issue, so the way the law was previously structured was that if you were 54 on 1 March 2016, 3 days ago, then when you got to retirement and you're a Provident Fund member, anything in that Provident Fund could be taken as a lump sum, even your future contributions. So you could contribute for the next 10, 15 years and you could still take it all as a lump sum. And now we're saying, if you were below 55 on 1 March 2018, then the same will apply to you then. So you can take your full amount as a lump sum, even future contributions. So you can still get the tax deduction. I mean, we thought it was quite generous. You can still get the tax deduction for 10, 12 years of contributing if you were 55 and still be able to take it as a lump sum. And as a part of our grandfathering, we didn't want people to have to change their arrangements when they're so close to retirement.
You're done. Right. To Mishan.
Thank you, Chair. As an honorable member, just want to get clarity from Mr. Treasurer. Are there any implications from the money bill side, Chair, are there any implications for the fiscal framework on any outlets? Can you just say that to the members?
So the big revenue implications are on the tax deductibility side. You're giving a tax deduction for employee contributions to a Provident Fund, and we're capping the contributions at 350,000, which people who have previously contributed would now pay income tax on. And because that's all gone through, it's all within our forecast.
If you look at C of the budget review, we have a figure, it's about 26 billion. On just the deductions for retirement savings. I don't have the exact figure, but if you look at the next year's sheet, the tax expenditure table is the first one. It has a line on tax expenditure there as well.
Chair. Sorry, Chair. I just wanted to make a follow-up on a question that Jim Hansen has asked. And how I understand it, maybe you might not mean this, but it just brought this to my attention. The question is, what will be the fiscal implication in the event that now that we've postponed this specific section on amortization for 2 years, in the event that people then decide to cash on their pensions, the fiscal implication, and that's like just a simple example. Let's say 500,000 people decide to resign before 2018, who are members of the Provident Fund, and they decide not to annuitize and take lump sums. This is an implication thereof, and given the fact that we have preferred to make certain investments that will accrue to the economy for the upper years, such as our parents' economic growth. And not only that, and the social implications of encouraging people to cash on their pensions
And for instance, here is Tandy, she's less than 55. She decides to cash on her pension. By the time she reaches 70, she has completed her fund. It means she goes back to the bucket of people who receive grants from the state. So is there a way of calculating what would be the impact and implication of that decision in an event that they're taken so that we can discuss that part? Yes.
There's members that joined us during the meeting. Are there any other questions from members? No? Thank you. Hold on.
Look, generally the way we try to design things is never to have what we call a cliff effect. So even if you took your 55-year-old, if you were on, let's say, on the 1st of March, let's say had you gone ahead 54 years and 364 days, the point is all your savings up to that point, whether you were 55 or 35, that vest was also a vested right. And that was in terms of the old rules. Because only your new savings, if you were under 55, that would fall in the net. And of course, even that had to reach the amount of 247,500 rand. Okay. And then you're looking at the bucket with lots of holes, because if you resign the day before you retire, you could cash it out and pay a bit of a tax. So there was never a situation where if you just, you know, were just before the deadline or after, that suddenly the entire amount had to be annuitized or not annuitized, whatever it may be. So generally, that's how we do the specials. Otherwise, you will get perverse outcomes. And that's why it was actually take the withdrawals. There was no need for people to rush and worry about the withdrawals because we didn't even deal with it. We still allowed it. But I don't know if you want to add on. So the question, of course, is more, is harder to measure, but the reality is that people who cash out are hardly ever likely to have enough money when they actually retire as an income. They are going to be dependent on their family, they are going to become very, very poor compared to where they were. And that's why I think obviously our message has been that you've got to almost help people to go and get used to the concept of a monthly income even when you retire, and that's what an annuitization is.
I'm sure to end on, I ask this question deliberately because a mom doesn't know how to say what he just said is the suit and the page. You can help me to make it
sure.
I'm saying, Chair, first I'm apologizing to be a nuance, but I'm saying, I ask this question deliberately because what Momo has just said, that's not true, that doesn't know how to say it is so to NCP. That is what's going to be affected at all. So we just need to create that so to NCP.
Well, we did ask that we serve a massive, in consultation with the union movement and civil society, whoever, massive consultation engagement process in which we did say, Tan, if you recall, we want it done in all languages. It is part of the program. We said speaking in English is really wrong. Almost unknown because the workers genuinely, who are misled, think that, you know, this thing is going to be a nationalization of their money and all that, and we can't afford that. It should be in Tshivenda in every language, actually. But that was what we did say. And no matter how, it seems to me, whatever the outcome of this process in Parliament now, that should still be done. Whatever we think about the annuitization, whether we are people opposed to it or for it, we all have one common interest, is to inform workers that to resign, especially those who are in pension, to resign from their job because you feel your money is getting nationalized, then it's not going to happen. It's just wrong. But we understand you're going to get it. As long as you're resigning for the reason that you need the money and not because you're scared of it, then it's your choice. But don't do it because you're scared. That is something Parliament must also get involved in. So whatever the outcome of this process, by the time you get to your committee voting on the bill, I think it's something we could now report. And I do note that Kusatu also came out while opposing the bill in one of his statements or so, it said, look, this is not going to happen. This is clear public sector workers for that matter. And what you reported to Parliament before is that it's a much higher proportion of public sector workers or in pension funds who are actually doing this. I'm done. I don't know. Tang is right. We agree with him.
Well, members, we're going to move on to the agenda. Thank you for the presentation by the Treasury, your engagement. To Sarton and Asisa, I must mention that we received presentations from Busa, from an individual from Sandhurst, the CEO, Andrew Crawford, Cashflow Communications. They tabled a presentation signed by Mr. R.E. Fulham and the National Union of Metal Workers of South Africa, as well as from Bauman Kofilin, EG. That is in your pack, so we acknowledge the receipt of this presentation. Kusatu, are you ready?
Really?
Yeah, you may proceed.
Thank you very much and good afternoon. We want to take it from the statements that were made that says that have not been caught up on the past, but let's look at the present and the way forward in terms of the issues that are on the table. We will not respond to some of the questions that were made. Safe to say that we stick to other issues that we've made publicly and continue to do so. But that is not the platform why we're invited today. We're not invited to answer those questions. At an appropriate time, I think if we are invited to respond, we'll do so. We also want to take it from the Treasurer's point that They seek ways in terms of how to proceed in terms of the retirement fund's responses, the broader picture on the retirement fund forms. And the fact that everyone wants to see his savings being safe and protected, and that the question of getting a united message is very important in dealing with these particular issues, to avoid the public attacks, the integrity, and the reputational damage that has happened in the processes of trying to deal with these issues. So we're looking for an open engagement, and we also agree that the question of whatever we do is not regarded as a trick somewhere in the particular process. So the question of transparency, the question of integrity, and the question of giving confidence back to public discourse is very important for us. Committee will not go back to the issues of who's right, who has been wrong in the past, because that is a history and has been recorded as such in terms of the different views that we hold. But one to take it from the point that the matter has now been put in the public debate, there's a disagreement in terms of the processes that has been evolved, whether it's been consultation, the quality and all those issues, where the point on which what is the way forward in regarding to the current law as it stands now. And we've made some objections which are correctly captured by the chair that were opposed to the issues of amortization for the reason that we've made. I think we understand that we are not being asked to go back and give the reason, and if we are asked to do so, we will plead to do so, but we are not there. The issue is that there is a process now on the table in an attempt to address the concerns that we have raised. The concerns that we have raised is that we are objecting to the annuitization, we are objecting to the clause in the current Act that force workers compulsory annuitization in terms of the Act. Now we're looking to what is the suggestions coming up forth here, which is the suggestion that says let's postpone the annuitization by 2 years. Want you to confirm that the proposal of postponement is not new to us. It was done in the previous past. With an understanding, want to emphasize, with an understanding that the question of retirement fund reforms cannot be done in isolation of the comprehensive social security. And we've been calling for the comprehensive social security for the last 15 years. But secondly, we've been arguing that the retirement fund reforms is not the social security, is not the sole responsibility of the treasurer. It's a social development that, in our view, is supposed to be leading in this party. It's not a tax law issues only. But we appreciate that when we've been told that the cabinet has mandated the two ministers to co-chair interdepartmental with an aim of presenting at NEDLAC the issues of the comprehensive social security, but also want to protect the integrity of the NEDLAC. We fully understand the issue that NEDLAC or Parliament is not subjected to a NEDLAC reaching an agreement. We understand that very well. But it's not taking the NEDLAC process as just two emotions. You see consensus, and there has to be a vote, and that's the sign. When NEDLAC conclude, both in terms of the Act, both in terms of its constitution, but both in terms of its protocol, it must submit a report, not to the Minister of Labour, but to the relevant minister who has tabled a policy proposal to NEDLAC. So there's separation from the annual report that is given to Cabinet through the Minister of Labour from a policy proposal that has to come to NEDLAC back to the Parliament to take the issue. Parliament has no obligation not to pass a law waiting for NEDLAC. We fully understand those particular, and we're not debating those particular issues. But there has to be proper consultation. The report has to be submitted. And there have been many reports in the past submitted that say this area has been agreed, this area has not been agreed. So we don't want to go back to and do the accusation. Why are we then opposed to the postponement? Two reasons for us. First is that it has been postponed in the past, but the obligation to respect that particular process of dealing the comprehensive social security has not been respected. So how are we going to trust it now that if it's postponed, it's not to come in the same format as it is today? So we are worried about that particular issue. But the postponement is just because it may have no impact in terms of the legislation in any way, because both the traders, the impact of this thing has been 5 years now. So we were worried that there would be no comprehensive social security table. There's been another take here, which we appreciate that maybe this time we need to give the leeway to the Treasury and understanding that the Cabinet has really emphasized that there must be a comprehensive social security. Our second line is that postponement may bring the issue in the same form as it is today. In other words, there will be no proper consultation. We want to have a process that has to be really engaging, to debate and engage with government. How did they reach that workers must only be able to receive as a lump sum from the 100%, only 25% of their money? Currently now they are entitled to receive 100%. How do they come to the 25%? We are raising this issue, Chairperson, avoiding, of course, to bring forward the debate at that time, because when we go to these issues, we may debate as if we're already discussing annuitization and the comprehensive social security, but we indicate that postponement is not the right way for us because we are fearing that the status quo will be just implemented come 2018. So that's why our view and our proposal which remain was that we must expand
those sections in the law that talk about annuitization and allow the process to be engaged honestly, transparently, and whatever the outcome, the package may look like, whether it's 50%, whether it's 75%, has to be the product of engagement in NEDLAC, and therefore then the parliamentary process can then kick start from those particular issues. We don't want to debate the issues as whether government may have the right to interfere with the workers' salaries, deferred salaries. I think the debate has been had, but we are moving forward now to a new dispensation that will allow to do this thing. If there are any proposals that will suggest in us and give us confidence that the postponement or whatever, the deferral or postponement, clearly will give the confidence in the system that Treasury this time is prepared to engage honestly, I think we can be looking to those issues. We can seek mandate and we can engage. Lastly, workers want to save. There's no doubt about that. The problem find are the products of workers on their own, not with government, on their own, engaging their employers as part of their wages that they want to save. So it's not by initiated by government, by anybody else. It's a worker's decision that they want to save. The issue is why then the withdrawal when they leave the workplace or when they retire. And we said we can debate those issues because there are good reasons why workers have to withdraw their money as a lump sum. It's a choice they take. Workers have either to belong to a pension fund or to belong to a provident fund. They choose the provident fund. And it cannot just be taken by a stroke of a pen. They take a risk because it's risky for a worker to belong to a provident fund than a pension fund. They know that. They fought for this particular issue. It's a very emotional issue, but they are prepared to engage. We agree with anybody else that the question of masters, I mean the designation in terms of those things, 96,000 people resign from that particular issue, concerns. But it's an issue that we needed to address. At some point in time, we were trying to issue a joint statement with Treasury, but we could not because we were disagreeing on the issues of the preservation. But on our own, my issuing statement every time we're making this call, please don't resign, because we're engaging in this particular issue. The last issue I want to raise, what is the high risk on these issues? People may be talking about the high risk that government eventually will have to bear the cost when people have received their money and child all of it. But a big risk, besides that one, the biggest risk is when workers are not satisfied by this explanation and they collapse this industry, the retirement fund industry. There's nothing stopping workers to withdraw their money with those who belong to the provident fund and refuse to go to a saving and demand from the employers that whatever you contribute to the retirement fund as part of my salary, pay to me today. That is the biggest risk that we have. And unless we manage those issues properly and we have the confidence in the processes, I think that's the big risk that we're facing. So, Committee Chair, I don't want to go to add details. The issue here, and I think the issue that stands between us and the proposal amendment, is whether it's a question you scrap those sections or you postpone that particular section. But whatever we do, our issue is that we don't want us to pack these issues and implement it in the same form 2 years down the line, no comprehensive social security, no proper and transparent engagement.
Are you done? Thank you very much. It's my sentence. I captured postponement must give assurance for better engagements. I wrote it down. Word by word. Fine. Thank you to Kosatu. We're going to take a season.
So can I explain it? It's very rude to leave a meeting when people are making submissions. Unfortunately, it's linked to practical matters around the program. And if I don't sort it out now, we've got troubles about tomorrow as well, right? So I have no choice. Yeah. That is why we co-chair. But I'm very aware what Kosatu thinks, and obviously
We will look line by line at the bill and so on. So I apologize for that. But all my evidences, as I said before, to speak is linked to my work here. I have no choice. You have to manage things in order to manage a very difficult program. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Ashisa. Afternoon, Ragam, if you're ready, you can proceed. Before the lady starts, there's only one bus to the villages, and that departs at 5 o'clock. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good afternoon to the honourable member and to and to other visitors. ASISA represents, as we have informed the committee before, we represent a great percentage, a large percentage of the retirement fund administrators in the country, as well as asset managers in the country and life insurers. So when we speak in respect of this particular element, we are speaking in respect of our membership. We operate on a mandated basis, and we speak particularly on behalf of our members who are retirement fund administrators. And in that regard, I would like to reiterate that the ASISA has always supported the harmonisation of retirement funds. Because we have three different types of retirement funds at the moment, and we have always supported similar tax treatment, if the tax treatment of those funds should be the same. The access to benefits on resignation and retrenchment should be rendered the same. That annuitisation on retirement should be made the same. Annuitisation is obviously the topic of the discussions in particular today, the providing part lump sum the balance as a retirement income or an annuity. And currently pension funds and retirement annuity funds, as you know, operate in this way where part lump sum on retirement and the balance as an annuity is the way the tax laws require members of funds to retire. However, provident funds are not aligned in that they currently can pay out 100% of the benefit of retirement. And Treasury has indicated in their various papers of their long-term intention to streamline the entire system by simplifying and harmonising the structure, and the ASISA strongly supports this because the simplification and harmonisation can facilitate consolidation of funds. Where previously you had funds with different methodologies of treating members on in respect of contribution, tax contributions, in respect of access to benefits on retirement, access to benefits on retrenchment, access to benefits on retirement. Where all of those factors are made the same, then you can, at the end of the day, at the end of reforms, in several and probably many years' time, hopefully we could have simply one kind of fund, and that is less confusing, simpler to administer, and would achieve better outcomes. So Treasury has begun that journey. The same tax deductibility of contributions was achieved with effect from 1 March of this year. The same benefit structure on retirement is currently legislated, but we are hearing what we have heard, and it's being debated or discussed now, that this should not come into operation on 1 March 2016, but should be delayed until 1 March 2018. Same access on resignation and retrenchment, well, in the ASISA's view, that would hopefully be rendered the same in future, but that is something for many years down the track. As I said, the result of streamlining and simplifying the system, the ability to combine different funds, will achieve cost saving in many, many ways. ASISA members are therefore very disappointed with the 2-year delay in the annuitisation of provident funds. The small, gradual steps that were being implemented, and we understand that they do have to be implemented gradually, were at least underway. and the with the vested rights for members, as have been discussed, but nevertheless, the journey had begun. Members introduced or incurred significant costs in order to introduce the annuitization, and this, it now seems, is having to be undone very, very quickly, and because of the changes that seem inevitable. And members have asked that we must please assure the committee, both committees, that we're committed to reducing charges, but this sort of having to build systems and unbuilding systems and extensive training and communication, which is an extremely important element of everything, also cost doesn't help in reducing costs and increasing understanding as to how the change system would work. However, our members do understand the concerns of various Labour constituents. We understand. We have heard their concerns. We have heard the motivation behind their of wanting annuitization to commence. We understand the need for compromise at this point in time. So do support the temporary postponement. But we do urge Trudy at the same time to engage with all stakeholders as soon as possible, and possibly a new approach to engagement, but it sounds as if that is underway, would assist to avoid the stalemate that previous engagement appears to have resulted in. Because in our view, the retirement system just can't afford more uncertainty and confusion from any further delays to this important step in retirement fund reform or any other retirement fund reform aimed at better outcomes for all citizens. And what I would also like to point out that the new laws that we are now discussing should be changed, but based on fact effective, because one march has come and gone. So systems are being rebuilt. People are working night and day. They have had to make a call as to which way things are going to go, and they are assuming that the postponement will go ahead and are having to make changes accordingly. It's not desirable to have to operate without final legislation, but they have to take steps in one direction when there is uncertainty like this. So another plea is that please could resolution, if at all possible, these committees could do anything in their power. I know that your agendas and your plate is very full with the various aspects of legislation that you're needing to deal with, but urgent resolution of how this bill is going to be amended is very, very important to our members. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for Aziza. Thank you for Kusali. All the members, questions?
Thank you, Chair. I only have two short questions for Comrade Bedi. If I'm wrong, you will correct me. I hear him saying that any percentage determination should be determined by the metric processes, whether you want to send a certain percentage for annuitization or not. So, am I correct to understand you to be saying that this is actually the gist of the matter, that you want to determine in a discussion the percentage that needs to be annuitized? Does it therefore suggest that consulting does not have a problem with annuitization? Maybe it wants to determine the percentage. And then the second question, now that the process is in Parliament, will consulting maybe accept if further engagements and discussions can take place at this level, the same discussions that could have maybe taken place at NEDLAC level, since I assume that preservation is the only issue that they have so far raised, can't we maybe further engage on that one? I'm merely asking you, correct me if I might be creating a cumbersome environment, because I understood the issue to be preservation and processes that unfold. Now, I want to know, now that the matter is there, is it possible that then we can deal with the matter at this level with construction, so that if there is a need for further engagement with the workers, it will have been done having engaged at this level. My question might also sound like a suggestion in a way, Chair. but let's get everyone back to change it, because it's Ramas on this. Thank you very much.
Any other questions? Although many.
My question is to Kusaki. You made the point that going forward there needs to be proper and transparent engagement. That was the term you used. What will Kusaki do differently to ensure that there will be proper and transparent engagement, given the fact that in the last round your engagement is frankly dishonest? And it doesn't seem to me, under those circumstances, that there could actually be a proper and transparent engagement process, because you're just simply unreliable, dishonest, negotiating.
Order, honorable members. Order. We must get a way forward. The integrity of this institution called Parliament is also set. It's how we address this issue. All of us is a collective, coming from different parts. Because the country is watching us at this precise moment. This is televised live. So let's take that responsibility and assist each other. Any other questions?
There are certain norms, actually. You're a new member, but there are certain norms, actually. They may not set out in the rules that define relationships between stakeholders, whoever they are, and MPs. We want to encourage public. Prasad is not afraid of you. 1.9 million workers in little David, no. But I'm not afraid of them. I'm afraid of nobody, as you well know. Why should I be? What am I going to be afraid of? But I wanted to get a COSATU office better, and I'm lobbying them to become president of COSATU. We're getting an ex-congress, come with Becky. I can't become a member of COSATU. What am I afraid of them for? I can't think. The role I play outside this country is separate from this issue. So David, listen, you've done this before. I've spoken with you, right, on the SAE matter. You can be aggressive and robust in content, but hey, not in the way you use these words. It's irrelevant. Your point is, will they negotiate in good faith? Now, you in Parliament, I know you can say somebody's lying, right? Is that correct? Can you say that, Alice? You can't. It's unparliamentary. Why is it okay to say that in a trilogy? You are lying. In Parliament, I'm not sure. I'm not a speaker. As a Jenkins, can you say somebody is lying?
Rules of blind committees.
So can a member in, not David, any member, myself, okay, with the grooming dogs of capitalism, right? Because please, David, if they come here, can I say you are lying? Can I say that Advocate Jenkins? So he must withdraw that, right? Can he say, or can anybody say, you are dishonest? Can you say that? Is that a parliamentary acceptable term?
No, I think we must take advice from the table, but I think the issue is that one must make your point and not attack the...
Not a public hearing. I don't mind David, you call me a liar, because I'm not, but you can say it, right? Who cares what you say? But the point is, I'm asking you to withdraw it. All the people are asking you to withdraw it.
With respect, I'm not going to whisper because you are
lying. Can I ask him to leave the meeting? Can I ask him to leave? Yes. Well, I'm giving you 2 minutes to think about it. Can you agree to go chair on this thing? Are we both going to be? No. It is, you are not about the norms and rules of Parliament. And okay, you're going to get to the media this evening, because that's what you want, presumably. Presumably, you should statement you're going to say that beforehand.
It's very unlikely, Jay.
Yes. So you're getting to the media, it's a bit late, but presumably by tomorrow morning you're going to be, wait, really, can I ask you a question? Have you already issued a statement that you were going to say that COSATU is lying so that the media is alerted? Do you want to answer that question? You don't have to.
No, I haven't. I
think, Jay, I'll be right to tell him to withdraw. And can we ask him to leave the meeting if he doesn't within 2 minutes? He might want to confer with his party political lawyer, whatever.
We don't have party political lawyers.
No, they might have. Can we ask Ms. Coaches to leave?
Yes, if you mind.
Okay. I'll give you 2 minutes to mull over it, during which we would like you to leave.
The rules of the House applies in committee meetings as well. And honorable members must please acquaint themselves with the rules. It must be on your table, like your Bible, read it every day. Honorable, Tony?
Chair, actually, you covered it, because that's what I was going to raise. But a committee meeting is an extension of the House, according to the rules. And I'm going to make a concrete suggestion, Committee Chair, that in future, if that's acceptable by the Chair, that we read our certain rules to members in an event that they don't understand the rules. But also, Chair, I want to submit to yourself that we have noted on many occasions the aggressive approach of Honorable Mayor, which personal attacks to individuals who appear in front of the committee. And we are not satisfied with how the alleged certain words that are really aggressive to individuals that we can intellectually engage in this meeting. So I submit to your good sense that we need to record our concern as a committee towards the manner in which Honorable Mayor engages in our meeting is unacceptable. And the rule is very clear. Committee meetings are extensions of that. And I'm here that the chairperson was able to say that before I spoke, I think,
can I defend?
Chairperson, I wanted to say that the Honorable Mayor must also know that we can as well do what he's doing, but we are respecting the rules of this House. And I think as a committee, or as members of this committee, we've been tolerating him too long. If he has issues, we have a question on this, but that there's a platform for him to do that. But then we also have to restore the respect of the House as members of this committee, to respect each other. And if he wants to be respected, he must do that. He must respect other people.
No, Honorable Chair, thanks. I'm not on that matter. We have made the ruling. I wanted to continue with the discussion.
Can we just have David, because we have asked him to go? If you don't want to go, I've never done chairing a meeting since 1998, and it's regrettable, but hey, nobody's above the rules. David, I'm asking the key to your nicer side to actually recognize what you're doing is out of order. You can't say they're lying. You made that point earlier, and it's covered, and can we please just withdraw that?
Chair, I'm not going to withdraw the statement, but equally I respect the rules and I will respect the ruling and I will believe that I'm firm in my conviction that you have been dishonest and have lied.
So you'll have to leave. Right. Can you continue then? Are there any other questions? You want to raise something, correct?
Got one more question. What are you doing?
No, thanks, Chair. Another word is mine. I want to ask Osha to a question, and please pardon my ignorance on this, but the manner in which I characterize your first concern in terms of extensive consultation, and that there has been a difference in the past, and that your fear is that if the postponement is agreed upon, you suspect that the same situation might return again and come with the same result. So the manner in which I characterize your concern is at this base of speaking. And what is that start to propose that we do to ensure that all CS are allowed and to reduce collectively in the manner that is acceptable and that would make us to have consensus on this. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other member to pose a question? On Dr. Blasch?
Chairperson, thank you. I think I don't want to go back. I think you covered, extensively, quite a few issues, and this is something that I think that is necessary. Obviously, we ended up in this situation now, and I think going forward, we need, as a committee, we need to ensure that the decision that is going to be taken, and obviously, how the legislation is going to be changed, is that, we ensure that really the consultation part, I think it's important that we ensure that everybody agrees on exactly what the needs are, You know, we cannot just postpone it for the sake of postponing. My concern is, as I said, we really need to ensure that it does come around. We get it right. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Yes,
a few questions, right? One is, some of them are not addressed to the stakeholders, but they're addressed to the committee members to think about, and some of the stakeholders might want to apply themselves to. One is, firstly, it's a question really to National Treasury Advocate Jenkins. What's the legal situation right now? It's the 3rd of March, right? Secondly, Asisa is also saying, finish the bill quickly, for certainty's sake. Perhaps we should have informed you. We have got a program, and I think you will have finished on your side on the 15th of March. So it's up to the Minister and the Department to ensure that the President promulgates it quickly. My understanding is, COSATU is also wanting it as soon as possible. So on that, I think we all agreed. We also, as Parliament, must express our regret to you that you are experiencing all these problems with systems. So to be fair to you, this has been toned every year. And you have invested a lot of money in your systems and training and so on, and each year it gets deferred. And we are, as a Parliament, as a government, I think even COSATU, with all its reservations, arguing for investment and growth and so on. I mean, I think all of us have agreed. If you look at the responses to the budget, you know, even parties from the left, if you like, or structures who normally are very critical of the budget, acknowledge that actually we need private sector perhaps like never before. So it is regrettable that you're experiencing the challenges you are. And I think Parliament feels sorry about it. And we want to avoid this sort of thing happening again, so that you, any other sector in the private sector, doesn't experience this. We really want to encourage you to invest in the country and create jobs. Then can we some report on the social security paper? In our report, Parliament, we certainly expedite it. The chair of this committee, I don't know how much to say, because it's towards November and so on, and in exchanges with various members of the executive, has been alerting them that, look, and honestly, we thought you're fairly close to finishing the social security paper, and we're hoping it'll come in the first quarter of this year. I noticed Mr. Godin said either in his statement or in some of the documents that will be done by June. I have visited Treasury yesterday, and we would plead that it be done very quickly. I've spoken to Minister Clavini as well. So, you know, outside the meetings, obviously, I do have to report to you that, hey, I'm on the same plane as Minister Tlamini, I raised the matter with her. I bumped into Minister Godan and then Minister Lafatla, I raised it with him. So obviously I do my work, right? Inshallah, I should share them with you, but you know, we get some minutes. But we have been working on this thing. And really, we would like some assurance that Treasury is working concertedly with social development to finalize this thing and whoever else. Can you have some sense of where that process is? Then, I wanted to ask, I want to respond Treasury to COSATU's concerns that you postponing the thing because you're under pressure, and then you do exactly what you did in the past according to the way they see it, right? So that's a question to you. On the other hand, the question to COSATU is, they're arguing, Comrade Vicky and Matthew, that there's no good faith, I'm putting it in a nutshell, right? There's not enough good faith on your side, and there isn't a commitment on your side to expedite this thing. So we need some commitment from you to Parliament that you're going to take the discussions seriously. In the first instance, the social security paper, that you will participate fully in NEDLAC and whatever is required, because you've been demanding it, you've been saying it must precede the finalization of this issue of annuitization. So what commitment can you give us as Parliament? We have a right to ask it because you're asking for us to defer this. It's based on understanding, or expands this, but you know, the deal at the moment is current, and what would happen now? How do you know that you will cooperate fully on both the social security issue and the finalization of this annuitization matter? Then there's an issue that arises for you. If you insist on it being expunged, to use your word, do you accept National Treasury's argument that it would mean that the workers on provident funds would lose out on a tax deduction? Do you think that was related to the other? And if so, is that something you get? Then the next thing I want to ask both parties here, but two of the three parties especially, is there, I know it sounds really absurd, right? So mechanical.
But the first problem that enters one's head is there's a way of compromising between complete expungement and merely deferment. Is there something in between? The only thing one can think about comments and complaints when you think about it, I don't have a view. I don't know if it's doable. There's no rocket science to suggest this. I mean, the sort of thing that any person involved in the post-1990 negotiations could have told you, or any person on the Constitutional Assembly could have said, is there no way of finding a compromise? One possibility may be some sort of conditional deferment. In other words, it's deferred, provided the following, they know Asisa will have a heart attack, right? So we want you to also comment on that, because you're going to say how. So now even more uncertain. Right? So we need your input, because Parliament belongs to you as well. If you have a right to have a say, and a full say, because it's directly affected, just like any other party. So you might want to think about, put your creative cap on. Given this bill's been brought back, it is an attempt to secure consensus. And government's really clear, it can't just secure concerted cooperation with the private sector. The president is also gone aboard saying, Labour, what about Labour? In fact, the president's meeting with Labour. Labour's been saying, how? Meeting with business 3-4 times before Sona, when are you meeting us? Why not us? And they're right. So if you look at the NEDLAC versus Asisa, what we also have is from your side, and for you to function and profit and benefit and fulfill your potential, you also need Labour, you know, to work in a cooperative. All of us need each other like never before. So what I'm saying is, can you apply your mind? Can you come with proposals also? As much as you might be unhappy with what there is, or something in between the deferment and the expansion. Is there no conditional deferment or conditional expansion? Put it where you want. We don't have much time. According to our program, we're going to vote on this bill next Tuesday, process this bill and vote on it, and then we're meant to go to the House on Wednesday the 9th. But if we come close to finalizing it, and we still haven't succeeded, we might look for 24 hours postponement if we have to. So if our aim to bring this bill back to National Treasury is to get some consensus, and if Kosatu is still unhappy, presumably Numsa is still unhappy and others are not here. I don't know, Numsa doesn't come here. Maybe they think it's a bourgeois parliament and so they're not interested anymore. I don't know. But whatever the reason, they have a right to their parliament too. I don't know why they didn't come here. So there is quite a strong voice out there of Labour besides Kosatu, which is unhappy. Though I recognize Kedusa and Naktu and all afford it. So if there's no way we can all put our heads together, members of parliament, the Umasangi, you, the research fellow, I will PBO, Parliamentary Budget Office, with a tax expert, Kosatu, you've got what's a thing called, the lady there that you work with, and you're politically very experienced in negotiations. There's a CISA, you've got yourself and expertise, there's Treasury, right? So why can't we all find an answer after this meeting by Monday noon or Monday afternoon, so we come to the committee. We've got some ideas we can exchange over emails and so on and so on. Now, I know you're opposed to this bill, presumably you're going to vote against it, but there have been many times where the opposition have opposed something, so we're voting against it. But hey, here's an idea you might want to think about, especially you, because you have a lot of experience of these issues. You're an expert on tax and finance issues and so on. So I'm asking if there's any possibility of moving forward fairly swiftly with an amenable, but also with a CIS on board. Then, you know, the other questions, Colonel Chair, we can leave because they're in a way eclipsed by what I've just said. Otherwise, I'm going to say, how do you know what I was going to ask? Who was that? Who was that? All right, there's at least 40 more minutes for your bus.
Honourable members, yeah. There were specific questions to Kosatu. If you're welcome to respond. Also, the Treasury, if you want to come in here. A point made by Kosatu that between today and Monday, that there be engagements. I wrote it down. So, that's the route to take. Kosatu?
Thank you, Comrade Chair, for the questions. We are not familiar with the processes and we don't understand sometimes the rules. We watch on TV only. So, but we normally take it from what Tim Kruwa said in terms of avoiding temptations. When you provoke, he says to us, postman would deliver the post, and it passed from each and every house and dog barks. What would happen if the postman put the post down and bark back to the dogs? And he said there would be more productivity. And
the dogs in the village bark.
Because the dogs would keep barking and the man at the post outside would keep barking. But thank you very much for the question. I think we want to move to what we were trying to do in this and try to respond to the question. Some of the question, of course, are hinging mainly on the future. I think we've got the present issue here that we there's a disagreement between ourselves and the pleasure in terms of moving forward. So from that time, the question of the percentage, whether it's 70-50%, those are the issues for the engagement that we said, whether you expand it, whether you postpone, we must engage on those particular issues. So it is not as easy as whether we're just deferring to the percentage, but the issues that workers want to say, that's why they go to the Provident Fund, there are difficult issues that needed to be engaged, which may determine whatever percentage you want to go to. So in terms of those particular issues. Now, we're not suggesting, of course, that the Parliament should replace NEDLAC in terms of those issues. We want the issues, because the Parliament will have more capacity to engage on these issues in details, in a manner that NEDLAC or the social partner must be able to engage in terms of those particular issues. Now, it's true that the issue that we are really talking about in the current law that is effective on the 1st of March 2016 is annuitization. That's the issue that we are only raising. That's not the issue that we said it must be taken from the law. But in terms of the retirement fund reforms, they are broad. There are many issues that we have indicated even to Treasury in NEDLAC. They are there in the 2003 Taylor report. They are there in terms of the high cost. We have some problems with the administrators and the fund managers. In our view, we want to engage with them. We think that overcharging the workers in terms of savings. So, but those are the issues that we want to engage in that process and see are they charging right. The question of many workers are not covered by any Provident Fund or Pension Fund. We need to engage in terms of those issues. So it's broader than that particular issue. Now, from the comrade across in terms of the fear of is when history repeats itself, but this has been done in the past and it happens again, you may be fearful. It's not a question of just fear. It's a question of the history that what has told you in terms of what needed to be done. Fully understand the issues, but when it takes 15 years, different officials saying the things that need to be dusted off, it makes us to be really uneasy in terms of dealing with those particular issues.
So, only by the way, that's exactly what we want to be fair to Kosatu. That's exactly what we've been hearing, right? You know, I raised this thing intelligently, right, about 2 years ago. We keep saying, the senior minister said exactly. They said, no, it's really, it's the same expression you got, Kamebe, which is you just got dusted off the sacks of thing. So, really, I think the committee needs to be tough on this thing, that you have to deliver. But I just thought I'll just raise that while you're speaking here. Sorry.
Okay. So it has been that issue as indicated. It has been told to the deputy president. 2 weeks time, deputy president, thing is going to be on the table. It has been told to anybody by, including the ministers, not only officials. The ministers have been told these things, there are small differences in terms of those issues. That is what concerns us, you said. Is it going to come back to it? So us is a building block. The building blocks are here. The key to discuss this thing of annuitization is the tabling of the comprehensive social security network. So we're not going to run away from engagement. We want to engage because besides annuitization, there are other concerns for us in the broader retirement fund things. That's the only thing we can give. To the issue that you are raising, Comrade Chair, we can take it from the layman point of view that the law can reflect what you wanted to say. So you can amend the law to take those concerns and be able to look at it to say these are the concerns we have. These are the concerns that the president may want, or people others on both sides. They may say, you are dilly-dallying when we understand their concerns, but we don't want to be unilaterally forced that money should be taken on those things without putting on the table at the same time the comprehensive social service. For example, if you want to make a small example, if you unmute the money that you had after when you go to retirement, if you 1,000 rands per month as your monthly income, and somebody who's an old pension gets 1,500, will it be fair for the workers who are safe to be denied even the beating that to be on the same level like somebody who has never saved? We said it's one of an example. We think it would be unfair to punish the one who has put some money aside than the one who has not covered it at all. So it's one of an example. We said, there are many issues, and to a certain extent, with the pressure, they hear our concerns. But to them, the starting block is the motivation. To us, the motivation is not the starting block. So we can talk about it. But coming back to you, to us, it is a question of the lawmakers must look to the current amendment. Whether you can combine the question of postponement and expansion and come up with the same effect at the end of it, I think we can look at those particular issues. Our amendment was that when it's taken out, and we hear pressure in terms of the declaration that if you totally expand it, then those who do the harmonization will be losing out. And we said we must look to the combination of the two. What can be done, what the law can say, that for the 2 months grace, 2 years grace, the 2 years grace for those harmonization and the condition. Equally, the same condition can apply on the other hand and come up with some kind of a legal framework that can consider the two without looking to want to look to the impact of it, but bearing in mind our past experience in terms of the postponement. And the postponement, that does not mean the same that what you put now as a status quo, which is the one that withdrawal that comes in 2016, then it says what was agreed in 2015 can't just kick on without having taken into consideration all the issues that so to an issue that it's possible that we can look in terms of those particular issues.
Okay, can I just follow up? So Tommy's question to you was, you are unhappy about one third, two thirds, that you can take one third as a lump sum, but two thirds you can annuitize, or is it that you oppose your annuitization in principle, right? So that, one of the options could be that the percentages could change. Now it stops through negotiation, switching the percentages around, and then gradually coming to one third, two thirds. But it's really sort of a broader question, which I think as members we have to think about. We can hear Kosatu, but, you know, we also, the majority party represent workers too, they're our main constituency, and sometimes we can disagree with Kosatu. We don't have to completely agree with this. Yes, how does Kosatu? So the question that arises for all of us is, surely we all want some form or another preservation. The issue is the extreme over-indebtedness of workers and poor people generally. The issue is the extremely sluggish growth of 0.9%, maybe even less, hopefully slightly more, and no growth in jobs. So the pressures on national trade, the pressures on people who are currently on provident funds going to increase much more. More people are likely to want to take it as a lump sum in the next period than the period we've just come to. That's one of the arises. So although recognizing over-indebtedness, recognizing the economic constraints we've got, it seems to be reasonable for Parliament to say there has to be some form of preservation, especially if this thing is incremental and gradually implemented. So let's say if there was open negotiations, it's possible to say that for the next 2 to 3 years, we allow workers to take two-thirds and keep one-third in, 80%, and a year later, 50%. But concomitant with that would be social security implementation,
growth, economic growth and job creation and so on. So that it's linked to other things. Also, it's a bit difficult at the moment for us to fully understand as finance how, by having social security paper, all these issues can be resolved. These are questions members need to apply themselves to. And maybe Kosato can come back on Tuesday morning with Matthew, if I don't think he's very busy, and deal with some of these issues. Because, you see, we also have to recognize that it's probably the case that with the enormous constraints on a budget, with the NHI under, challenge, that the social security reforms that European Fraser and Mulcahy had in mind over 10 years ago, and the social security that Cabinet will come up with now may be slightly different, given the new era we're in. So, I think, report to Parliament, we can just make this an immediate issue. But actually, the immediate issue is linked to very many long-term issues applied, not just to our committee, but the other committee, social development as well. So what I'm saying is, at some stage, I don't know when, it's useful for Kosato to come to the committee and say, okay, we don't like this thing, not to take funds, but these are the views we have on the issue of preservation. If we would like workers to preserve. But there are other forms of it apart from amortization. That's something I think you'll discuss between yourselves. But because we as Parliament are looking at this, well, we have an obligation to be briefed on these negotiations, but we also need to communicate via this Parliament to the public out there. Because we can't be narrow-minded and say, okay, let's expand or defer for 2 years or so on, or let's find something in between. What about the broader issues, Andy?
Okay, we don't have the luxury of meeting the likes of Comrade Betting Challenger frequently, And I want to exploit the opportunity for engagement and to pursue him on a matter of preservation and give Kusatu and National Treasury to relook the issue on how they will deal with the issue of preservation. So that in principle, and I'm begging, I'm on my knees, that I want Comrade Beg to consider the importance of preservation. The mode that overvalue of it can be an issue for later discussion. And also looking at, in the current conjunction, the economic challenges that we face, to be taken into consideration. So at least in principle, if we can agree that yes, there is a need to preserve, but the how part of it can be dealt with at that level. Because that's why I was asking, what is the gist? Is the gist the percentages of preservation, or is preservation itself? Because I do not believe that it doesn't agree, or construction in itself doesn't agree that at one stage it will encourage workers to save. If the issues, as I understand it, of the indebtedness, the poverty levels, the issue itself that we ourselves as the committee raised at one point to National Treasury that we might want to relook the percentages of the lump sums to accommodate those. So I'm trying to say an intention where we go into, because to see him again here, I can assure you, it's not as easy as you think. It will be better again, and I'm not saying complimentary. He's not taking, he takes us to task, we appreciate, but it's high level. Thank you.
Thank you for that valuable input. I recognize on the list.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. I'm sorry I had to go out to take a phone call. I just wanted to check whether the question about the tax free transfers from pension funds to provident funds had been dealt with in my absence or not.
Bruno?
We'll deal with, can I deal with the other issues as well, Chair? Okay. But Chair, I think, we get a good warm feeling, I think, with the Kusatu input, and I think, we certainly understand the frustrations. I think on the social security reform paper, believe you me, we are as frustrated as officials. But it is a complex paper, complex issue. It has to go through cabinet ultimately. That's why I wouldn't even want to go to a date. But honestly, I think it did he did say during in the speech, okay, that that's what we're going to try, because I think not promising that has generated a lot of suspicion and so on. So, of course, once the paper is published, I think it's going to disappoint some, others may be happy, because, you know, how far do you go with your class system? And I think you alluded to the issues on, you know, given where we are today, we're not where we were perhaps 10, 15 years ago. And so the issues are going to be difficult. And I think what we would want is to say also, assuming even if there was a dream, it's going to take many, many years even after the paper is published. And you can't have a big bang approach. In the meanwhile, there are some urgent issues to fix up. And we don't have a problem that has been done piecemeal. So there's been an issue between us. But Kasato has said, look, but if you show us a roadmap about where we're going, then we can talk through the details. And I think that's a reasonable request. But and of course, the problem then has been that we've not even heard their concerns on unitization, whether it's a percentage, whether it's, the issue of widows and beneficiaries. Certainly we've been talking about those things. And I think a lot of those can even be solved sooner rather than later. So that, because if you're in a pension fund, you already have to buy an annuity. And we agree that that annuity may not be the best possible product. We need to, therefore, I think, if we can accelerate this process of engaging, I think it would be good, and what I hear from the presentation from the GS of Kusatu, that certainly we're not that far apart on some of those issues. I mean, I think how the minister has put it is that we are open over the next 2 years when we talk about the digitization. We're not saying it has to be exactly as it is now, that we can talk about the design. In fact, the wording in the media statement, I think, he deliberately put in the words the design of the of annuities, so that, you know, whether it's 2/3, 1/3, or 40-60, it's either here or there. Okay, it might be if it goes the other way, but we need to talk about that. On the other hand, I think, as I've said in the presentation, if we can get better annuities, and of course, the moment the system is like a bucket full of holes, okay, we are solving one problem, but the bucket still has holes. So the issue of preservation certainly is an important issue. And let me say, when the Treasury started this process, we took quite a strong line on 100% preservation. Having consulted with the unions, we put forward a much more flexible approach so that people could also cash in a certain amount and make that cumulative. Okay. But we do need some discipline rules. If people know that they can cash out any day, it's a problem. But we said perhaps once a year you give people this opportunity. So I think there are issues that we can engage on. And I would appeal that we actually start this consultation soon. And even as we wait for the paper, that we talk on the detail of some of these things. To the extent that, and perhaps as a way forward, that in looking at the two-year issue, I think we are committing as government to say the social security reform paper will be out. Obviously, if it's not out, then that takes us, we're not going to make progress on other issues. But I think we could perhaps talk about the other issues that are urgent that we want to talk about. Okay, the other issue that, though, we do have to take into account, and I think it is a obviously a problem even within the Netherlands issue, is that you do have now the chair, the co-chair asked about NUMSA. I wish they were here, because we can craft an agreement, but I promise you, some of the other unions are also going to still disagree. In fact, if you look at some of their submissions to Section 77, their demands are slightly different. So, and I think the lesson certainly over the last few months has been that we do need to get all key players to come to some agreement, so that even if we will still continue to disagree on some things, but we're not going to go out and fight like to the death outside. That really, really frightens people, as I've said. So I think that we do need to be helped in that respect, because you know, when players have an outside net, like we've been meeting bilaterally with unions, certainly with NUSA there's been some interaction. With EMCO, let me say, it's been very hard. We can't even get a meeting. Okay, we've tried. Perhaps we haven't tried hard enough. But how do you actually achieve that so that you get buy-in on this? Tomorrow morning, we have to go to the Section 77 hearing at NABLAC with NUSA, EMCO, and NUPSO. So I think it's a union that, I must say, I don't know too much about National Union of Public Servants. Maybe I will push out to, yeah, so there's a union that's also joined the play there, okay. So I think that's the issue. Have I not got, I know there's a transfer issue. Is there anything else? Do you want to just make the case? Yeah, that's
I mean, and also, yeah, just to reiterate that there's lots of these details around the issues with the unitization that I think we're very open to discussing and to try to get to. And again, I mean, just the example you mentioned on getting a 1,000 rand and dirty, but someone can receive an old age grant of 1,500, and, you know, the proposal of universalizing the old age grant would hopefully address those problems. And those are the sort of things that we've got to think about and work towards. On the question on transfers, I mean, just to get some final clarity, yes. If you're in a pension fund, at the moment you can transfer tax-free to another pension fund, another pension preservation fund, or a retirement annuity. You can't transfer to a common fund. You would have to withdraw either lump sum withdrawal tax tables, which are quite high, so 18% of the 25,000, and that's the way we have to work. And if you're in a provident fund, you can transfer tax-free to a provident fund, pension fund, pension preservation fund, provident preservation, RA. Yeah.
Okay,
perhaps you
want
to
say
the
last
word, yeah? Those who are arguing for the bus will be over in 5 minutes or so.
Thanks, Comrade Chair. Let me just indicate that some of the questions that are put in Comrade Tanda are very difficult questions. The fundamental question, the issue that workers are asking, are we abolishing problem fund? In the context that one of the fundamental issues of the problem fund was the lump sum withdrawal. That's the only reason workers want to went to the problem fund. And many of the problem fund were pension fund early in the 80s. They moved to the problem fund because there were political pressure at that time. They lose a lot of their savings in that particular processes. But it was the price they were prepared to pay at that time. So it's like the issue when people debate the inflation and the wage increases. If you ask for more money, you put up the inflation and the cost of living goes up. But either way, so you may wish to get more increase, but the, and thereafter the inflation must go down. Unfortunately, the two sides of the same coin. It happens simultaneously. Workers are saving. I think we must dispel this issue that workers are not saving. Workers and provident funds are not saving. Provident funds are savings. Provident funds is nothing else but a worker's savings. The issue is at the withdrawal. Whether when you want to withdraw, you must get it on the money, a withdrawal of some sort, or you must get a lump sum. So workers are not there. Workers are not talking about these issues. In 2005, when the matter was coming up, workers were saying, we want to put the comprehensive social security together with the retirement form so that when we agree that, to whether to agree to the annuitization, what should be the percentage? So to give you the answer, I'm not saying workers are for annuitization, but definitely they are not opposed to annuitization. They got concerns that the working people cannot afford not to get some money in the current form of the pension and deal with these issues. By the way, the people who are resigning in a month are not the problem fund, are the pension funds, because the same issue that you're raising, they're over indebted. They cannot live, they know exactly they can only take one debt. But that one debt in the current life they have, they are forced sometimes to resign just to get that one debt. And by the time they go to the pension age, they say less in terms of those parties. So we must not look at an issue of the problem fund issue. The whole issue of saving and the living condition that we're talking about that we need to be addressed. But we're trying to avoid negotiating the kind of monetization and all those things in Parliament. That's why we want to go. We understand your issues, what kind of a message we want to put forward. But we don't want to be negotiating them here. We want to negotiate them at the right forum with the current mandate and dealing with those particular issues. Not everybody is in Netland, as not everybody is in Parliament. But we have to accept that to be able to be in Parliament, you need to meet a threshold. As equal as if you have to be in Netland, there's a threshold that you need to meet. And if you are not meeting that threshold, you have to find other way of dealing with those particular issues. But you can't then hold back those who are here and say, no, we can't pass a law in Parliament because there's a party that we know historically, but it does not have the support because it is here and therefore we cannot do it. So we are not condemning those who are not in Netland. We have to find a way. I mean, there will always be public hearing and people can comment whether they're in Netland or not in terms of those issues. But you can't therefore put Netland in ransom and say, no, there are other people. Let's negotiate. And the report will be tabled, Parliament will give them access in terms of engaging in terms of those particular issues. So I want to go back to your issue that you have made, that look, let the people who are dealing with the legal matters look to the issue that you have raised. If they have to make amendment to the current bill, let's engage on it. Of course, we take your advice. If we have some thought made, we submit them by Monday and to say, in terms of the engagement today, whether there's any other suggestion that we can make in terms of this thing.
Our availability, Comrade Kangi,
we're always available. Invite us, but don't abuse us. Invite us and we will talk to those particular issues.
Okay. I need to say thank you, Honourable Chair. With regard to the early apology in respect of all the changes, thank you very much. It's appreciated. We are dealing with them as best we can, and we'll certainly take the apology back to members who will appreciate that these two committees understand the positions that they're in. Insofar as us putting our heads together looking to what type of conditional postponement could possibly be acceptable to all parties, we'll certainly put our minds around that and see what we can come up with. If the staff will be prepared to work with us on that, we would appreciate that very much, because there's no point in us coming up with something that then is not acceptable by then either, because I don't think we'll get anywhere without working together.
Just remember that we're in Parliament now, and ultimately, if you make a good proposal, it's for Parliament to decide, not for COSATU to decide. And if it's very good and COSATU disagrees, then the minority in this committee will decide, right? This is a very in Parliament that COSATU participates in. Many of the ex-union officials are here as members and cabinet ministers, and no doubt they'll deliver them in the future, so it's their Parliament too. The Charter of Parliament. So you can engage with them, and that's great. If you just sit together and come to the floor, handy, wonderful, make our life easy. We've got the Mandals Act, okay? Give us a break. We're going to finish. So if you can come to a deal, fine. If you can't, nothing stops you. In fact, you have to write to Alan and Peter Paul, and we will look at your proposals. So don't be intimidated by consent, okay? Right. The next thing is, colleagues, there are some things we don't have much time. Think about these things. There are not things that are binding on us. There are some things to think about. One is, yes, we can play a role, but not NEDLAC, not at the capacity, but we would like NEDLAC to work more effectively. Our sense about NEDLAC is that it itself needs to become more effective. Not just about this tax bill, but in general. We know that NEDLAC is not working to its maximum capacity. Our race is with the Labour Chairperson to also engage with NEDLAC around this. So NEDLAC should be more effective. Secondly, there's a point COSATU constantly raised that never came up in our public discourse when we processed this bill last November. This is the view that Tracy was replied to some statement. This is the view that African people in general have a lower lifespan. Right? So the effect of your changes will mean that they will be, in a way, cross-subsidizing those of us non-Africans who live longer. That's a very new issue we never talked to. Right? And there are concerns also about how
you're on a provident fund, it's clear who's the benefit. You take lump sum and you give it. Whereas in the pension fund now, there are all these inhibitions. That's also an issue that we didn't think through fully. On the issue of preservation, I think in the committee as a whole, say we support preservation. The form that it occurs, whether it's for annuitization or this, is something that we would like greater consultation with the parties concerned here and in Ned LaCroix. We also, I think, would argue, as the majority party increasingly does, that, and I don't know if Kosan wants to see this either, 27% of the people on Social Security, we're the highest in the world, if I'm correct, right? We could do it in a previous time. And until we grow the economy, hey, you know what, it's going to be difficult. Yet, in order to put the Social Security budgets down, they have to go up. So it's a curious reinforcement that you need to create jobs so that fewer people on Social Security. But frankly, because you've got no growth and no jobs, there's a great stress on your job. So the right balance, it shouldn't be used as sanitization, as an excuse for not giving jobs. But on the other hand, we recognize the imperative to have more and more people able-bodied working in the economy. Then the issue of the options are manifold, maybe beyond the current proposals to us, and something that both sides need to talk about, all relevant sides, before they come to Parliament. Also, I think it's fair to say that there's a suspicion on the side of COSATU about national treasury, given their past experiences doing these and other issues. But there's also a reasonable degree of caution on the side of national treasury. Will COSATU play ball? So I think both sides need to find each other. But I think, overall, Comrade Chair, the gap between COSATU and national treasury is not sort of irreconcilable. It can be bridged. It's not insurmountable. That's what I was looking for. I also think that our view is that whatever our views on current proposals on the table, all of us need to communicate that there's no such thing, especially if you're on a pension, that your money is going to disappear. But if there are other reasons you want to withdraw it or go on and leave the job, what can we do about it? But not because you fear that your money is going to be appropriated and nationalized, right? I mean, who often talks about nationalization, not COSATU? Who chose also to take the downside of it is your members, fearing nationalization, are taking their money, right? Now, when you want nationalization for the country as a whole, the workers support that nationalization. Something we all need to think about, right? Not a joke, but half serious. Half a joke, half serious. So, let's come back to this. We have got the deadline. So we're urging finally that all partners, CISA, COSATU, the Treasury, and the two chairs, we must come up with some proposals before we come here on Tuesday morning. And the deadline for submission from all parties is noon Monday. But if you can deliver by 5 o'clock tomorrow, help us over the weekend to over the phone, and it's heard the registration, but we can communicate to ICT and try to find a consensus. Is there anything else you want to say, Charles, before you run up? Okay. Thank you all. And see you on Tuesday morning. Oh, but members, we see tomorrow at 9. No. 9 o'clock tomorrow, we finish at 12. Thank you.
In the same venue. Look, Karim and Motara, we must just sit together on the program.
Thank you.